for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Recording in progress.
A lot of us need help these days. We have Vladimir Putin speaking with Erdogan, the president of Turkey, wants to have a meeting with Zelensky. This is pretty damn interesting. Use the conversation to lay out Moscow's demands and conditions for a peace deal with Ukraine. The BBC World Affairs editor John Simskin spoke with Erdogan's top advisor and spokesman Abraham Kalin, who'd been part of a small group listening in on the phone call, spelling out Putin's demands. They break down into two categories. The first, appearing simple, at least on their face, for Ukraine. Those included acceptance by Ukraine that it ought to remain a neutral entity and not apply for NATO membership. This one seems particularly uncomplicated, as Ukraine President Zelensky this week conceded that very point. Ukraine must go through a disarmament process so as not to pose a threat to Russia. There must be protection for the Russian language in Ukraine, and there must be denazification. The last point comes with some complications, the BBC said, noting Zelensky himself Jewish, with kin who allegedly died in the Holocaust, have taken offense to any suggestion his nation has Nazi inclinations, but may I add, I think there's really no doubt about it. But, the BBC report said, Turkish officials nonetheless see this as relatively simple to sort out, perhaps by having Ukraine issue a blanket statement deploring and discouraging neo-Nazism. As for the second category demands made by Putin during his call with Erdogan, he repeatedly said it was likely he'd have to talk face-to-face with Zelensky. The BBC, however, said Zelensky's already indicated his willingness to do so. But if getting the two to the table together seems workable, the issues they would confront are bound to be a lot more complex. While less specific regarding these tougher demands, Kalin told the BBC they involve the status of Donbass in eastern Ukraine, where factions had already broken away and sought alignment with Moscow. Likewise, Crimea's status is on the table. All that suggests that two men will be haggling over a particularly challenging condition, a Moscow demand that Ukraine cede some territory in its eastern reaches. Kalin also seemed to suggest Zelensky would need to accept that Crimea, annexed by Russia in 2024 amid much controversy, now belongs to Russia without question. I add as an aside, that all appears to have been in accordance with international law, nationwide referendum where Crimea voted through a referendum to join Russia. There should not be a serious question here, where claims to the contrary are coming from Western propaganda outlets, of whom there seems to be an endless number. The BBC report said the demands did not seem as harsh as some have feared, nor worth all the violence and bloodshed arising from the intervention. On the flip side, however, the issues are bound to fill Ukrainians with anxiety. Improperly executed, they could open the door to another invasion in the future. Meanwhile, regarding Putin's mental state, although we've heard here allegedly that Putin's gone bananas, which I never thought was the least bit plausible. Kalin, in talking with the BBC, also addressed reports that Putin is ill or mentally unbalanced, saying he detected nothing to support those claims from the phone call. Mr. Putin had been clear and concise in everything he had to say, they report, which I think is 100% accurate. I'd like to invite Mitchell, your thoughts about this. These demands seem incredibly reasonable to me. I'd like your take. Mitchell, are you there, my friend?
There we go. I'm sorry. I was double muted. Do you really think that the whole situation is solvable by, you know, normal diplomacy and normal relations when, you know, for 30 years after the end of the Cold War, you know, the empire builders of the West have continued their march? I wish I could be more positive.
I get it, Mitchell. But, I mean, I regard this as Victoria Nuland's war. It was she who carried out the coup in 2014 to dump the pro-Russian then-president and replace him with a Western stooge at the tune of $5 billion American dollars. And, of course, we have mercenaries pouring into Ukraine, lots of weapons, the javelins, anti-tank weapons, and the Stingers, anti-aircraft are especially deadly weapons. You don't even need to have much of training to point and shoot with both of those weapons. And I agree very strongly with the following, that Ukraine appears to have been central to the cabal, the great Newsett's agenda. And where I'm profoundly concerned that this has devastated the wheat crop in Ukraine and Russia, too, which was, for reasons that aren't easily explained, unusually weak this year, which is going to lead to massive shortages of grain worldwide, as Mike Adams has been reporting, because of the time it takes to grow grain and to harvest it and all that. This is now inevitable, and I'm afraid he's got it right. Mitchell.
Well, Jim, wheeling off of what you just said, you know, in all honesty, look at China. How much of the world grain supplies has China bought up in, what, the last 2 to 3 years? More than 50 to 60% of the entire world's grain supplies.
That's fascinating, Mitchell.
I didn't know if you were aware of that.
No, I was not, and that's rather stunning. Tell me more.
Well, it's basically they've been stockpiling. And, you know, of course, for this coming world war, because, you know, it's going, of course, to center for China around Taiwan and for Russia around the NATO advancement to the east. China has been strategically preparing for a number of years. And I believe it's just time and opportunity that they really wait for to invade in Taiwan. The other piece of this is, you know, and I keep reiterating about this, that in the middle of the negotiations between the United States and Russia about Ukraine and about the march east by NATO and the social engineering and, you know, developing these social constructs. What I know is that the United States in the middle of the negotiations, and these were ongoing. Remember, these were not, this wasn't something that just started, you know, this was going 6 to 8 months or more that, you know, Victoria Nuland has been going back and forth to Moscow negotiating about Ukraine, its sovereignty, and, you know, this, the U.S. use of these color revolutions. In the middle of these negotiations, the United States organized and pulled off attempted to pull off a color revolution, a coup in Kazakhstan. In the middle of the negotiations, when you know, Russia is saying stop, stop, and you know, you don't send the architect for war to seriously negotiate for peace. You send the architect of war as a warrior in war diplomacy, is the way I kind of am looking at it. Well, so Russia is left no chance. Russia is left in a box.
Well, listen, I think you're making some very astute points, and I'm very concerned that Russia may ultimately have no choice but to take on the West. And while there are those like Lindsey Graham, who appears to be the consummate fool, who would encourage no-fly zones and direct military exchange with Russia, we would not like the outcome. They have a new devastating doomsday weapon that can be launched. It's a drone that would release a dirty bomb off of the East Coast that would make it virtually uninhabitable for 20 to 30 years. Just imagine one of those weapons being released over the United States. You take out the East Coast, including our commercial center, New York City, Washington, D.C., and the surrounding area, and America grinds to a halt. It becomes impossible to maintain the government. And while some might consider that an improvement over what we have now, which is making so many efforts to destroy the United States as though George Soros were in fact the acting president, which I believe is really the truth, the approximate truth of the matter, because Soros would be all for floods, millions coming across our southern border, the supply chain disruption, the surging inflation, vaccine the military, turning it woke with pink tanks and the like. I mean, these circumstances are completely absurd, and where, you know, the average American is suffering so massively that unless something extraordinary happens, the Democrats are going to take a bloodbath, not literally but figuratively, in November if they can't do something to stop it. And among the stories today are more and more proof about the theft of the election. Meanwhile, let me return to a resurfaced video shows Biden confessing he proposed bombing of Belgrade in a NATO operation in Yugoslavia, where he's been labeling President Putin a war criminal because of Russia's operation to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, launched on the 24th of February to defend the predominantly Russian-speaking people of the two breakaways, the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republic, against deadly offensive attacks by the Kiev regime. Now, I have archived Vladimir Putin's speech of 24 February, and it is masterful. It shows a vast knowledge and understanding of history, geopolitics, military aspects, implications, and so forth. None of the mainstream media here in the United States are even acknowledging that Putin gave such a speech, where he outlined exactly why it was a matter of national security for Russia to conduct a limited military, a special military operation into Ukraine. Here we go more. A video has resurfaced on social media where then a Senator Joe Biden, speaking at a Senate Foreign Affairs Committee meeting in 1998, says He suggested bombing the peaceful city of Belgrade and sending American pilots to destroy all the bridges on the Danube in 1999. Some of those bridges there, Mitchell, have been, you know, these are ancient structures that were of great historic significance and not just means of crossing the river. Then our head of Roscosmos, Dmitry Rogozin, reposted the footage on his social media account, reminding the current president of the NATO bombing of Yugoslavia, estimated to have killed around 2,500, including 89 children. Can Biden be reminded who the war criminal is, he asked. On the edge of his grave, this bloody old man must remember his atrocities, the thousands of civilians he killed. The Russian space chief statement followed the president's move to label Vladimir Putin a war criminal, where the Russian foreign ministry spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova, also reminded that Biden took place in a the video featuring Biden took place just a year before the bombing of Belgrade and no doubt had a causal significance. Biden says he was the one who suggested bombing the Yugoslav capital. I repeat once again, she remarks. He talks about this even before the actual bombing, explaining that if Belgrade had been bombed, as he advised, then 200,000 would not have died in Bosnia. And all this is being said by a representative of a state that had neither common borders nor a common history with Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia posed no direct or indirect threat to the United States or its citizens. Russia's operation to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, launched on the 24th, was in response to ramped-up deadly offensive attacks by the Kiev regime on the predominantly Russian-speaking people of Donbass in southern Ukraine. It came after Moscow officially recognized the two breakaway People's Republics, established in the spring of 2014, in response to the Western-backed coup in Kiev, and since then systematically subjected to abuse and genocide, constant bombarding by Kiev of these republics, bringing about thousands of deaths over the eight-year period since the coup was carried out by Victoria Nuland. Responding to the official request for military assistance from those republics, the Russian government has repeatedly stated the goal of the current operation is to neutralize Ukraine's military capacity while not harming the civilian population. The U.S. and a slew of NATO allies have vociferously been condemning Russia's ongoing operation as an invasion, despite their own bloody track record. Washington and its Western cohorts have waged numerous military operations unilaterally with no authorization from the UN, ranging from U.S.-led wars to proxy aggression with the bombing of former Yugoslavia as only one but glaring example. In 1999, NATO waded into the armed confrontation between Albanian separatists from the Kosovo Liberation Army and the Serbian Army that erupted in 1992, launching a military operation against the then Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. Joe Biden, Democrat senator from Delaware at the time, was among the first to call for the so-called lift and strike policy of ditching the UN-imposed arms embargo in place since 1991 and supporting Bosnian Muslims with NATO airstrikes. The operation, which witnessed use of military force by NATO without the approval of the UN Security Council, and let me add, under the UN Charter, that is therefore a war crime, ended up killing scores of civilians and wreaking havoc upon the country's infrastructure. Numerous bridges, industrial facilities, public buildings were blown up, along with actual military targets, where the airstrikes continued from March 24 to June 10 of 1999. The Serbian authorities say about 2,500, including 89, were killed. Children were killed and about 12,500 injured in the bombing. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić has said the use of depleted uranium weapons caused a dramatic surge in the number of cancer patients in the country. And Mitchell, I just got to point out, when Christopher Busby, who's an international renowned expert on cancer and radiation, went to Iraq to determine why Fallujah had such a stunning development of birth defects, two-headed, no brain, multiple arms, no arms, defects. And he expected it would be because of the depleted uranium in the anti-tank weapons that were being deployed by America, but was astonished to discover that it was from enriched uranium of a whole new class of tactical nuclear weapons the United States was deploying in Iraq. I don't need to emphasize that this was another grotesque violation of international law, or that the slaughter of Libya, which was initiated, undertaken by Hillary Clinton, where NATO attacked perhaps the most humane society on the face of Earth, where Muammar Gaddafi had been using the resources of Libya to benefit the Libyan people. They had national health care, national public education. Newly married couples were given $25,000 bonuses to start their family. He was undertaking the great waterworks project that would have turned North Africa into a veritable oasis, and introducing the gold dinar, which have rapidly become the currency of all of Africa. But France was unhappy because they wanted to exploit Africa for their own colonial or neo-colonialist reasons. And, of course, the Rothschilds weren't happy because they wanted to establish their own central bank in Libya. Indeed, it was when I heard that the rebel group in Libya, as its first action, had founded a new central bank that it became obvious what was going on there was totally different than what was being alleged. Gaddafi was not abusing his people at all. But the slaughter has just, and the butchering of Gaddafi, even though he was surrendering and didn't put up a fight, he was traveling to a location specified by the Department of State when Hillary had his convoy traveling under a white flag interdicted, and Gaddafi brutally murdered and sodomized with a bayonet. The war crimes by NATO in the United States are virtually endless. I mean, it is stunning, Mitchell. I welcome your comments, but Biden calling Putin a war criminal for intervening when he has good reason to do so seems to me profoundly hypocritical and reflect so badly on the United States when the history of our interventions abroad is known. Your thoughts?
The balkanization of the world is continuing. You know, you were talking about, you know, the breaking up of the Ottoman Empire and, you know, the restructuring of all those political and and country boundaries. And what we're seeing essentially is Ukraine essentially being balkanized, where, you know, the different regions are being essentially turned into ethnic enclaves. And that is one. That's one of the things that's driving, you know, part of this, war. You know, is, you know, just the, gosh, the ethnic hatred that, you know, it's being used and deployed today. It, you know, it's essentially no different than, you know, the ACLU, the United States government, the Democrat Party, you know, breaking out the race card. Yeah, and, you know, in Ukraine, you know, to make everybody angry, they break out the Russia card. And it's a, everything you're seeing is so, such a massive psyop, and it is so over the top. It's a wonder that people cannot see it, through this fog of deception that we're being put into. And, you know, who is it? Martin Armstrong has a computer program called Socrates, I believe is what he named it. And it's a data mining program, and it helps predict trends and future trends. And, you know, it's we've really got about a month to 2 months before this whole Ukraine stuff goes sideways big time, because of the West feeding all of the weapons of war into Ukraine. And, you know, essentially, you know, letting those that have the hatred for the Russians, you know, do the dying for the rest of everybody. And of course, have the Russians do the dying. It's going to be untenable. I had an idea this morning. I don't know where it popped into my brain from. We're about 2 minutes from the break, but, I was thinking that new technologies for the war that are going to be used is effectively these handheld Doppler radars that can essentially see through buildings and can, you know, see if anybody is hiding in a building. There are just so many different technologies that we have today that we didn't even have during the, you know, Iraq invasion. So it's going to be interesting what transpires, but everything is leading to escalation. So, and that doesn't end well.
I wish I could find reason to disagree with that. I do believe everything is leading to escalation, and the tragedy is Americans are oblivious. They don't understand. Russia is overwhelmingly more powerful militarily than NATO and the United States combined. They not only have the best anti-missile systems in the world, where their new S-500 can take out even hypersonic missiles. They have the best anti-submarine torpedoes that travel remarkably fast and are unstoppable. Similarly, anti-ship missiles that'll take out ships. They have the ability to freeze, to neutralize the computerized components and leave us helpless, dead in the water, as happened with the USS Donald Cook. We'll be right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, those who follow Revolution Radio know very well that the Department of Homeland Security is turning parents who protest the teaching of critical race theory or turning their children into the opposite sex. Those who challenge the events of 6 January, and perhaps especially those who are skeptical about the outcome of the 2020 election, are being characterized as domestic terrorists. This is about as absurd and as a reduction to absurdity of democracy in the United States as I could imagine in my many years as a citizen, that this should be the state of the United States in 2022. Meanwhile, we know massive evidence of the theft of the election, which appears to be as necessary in 2020. To bring us Biden-Harris and shut down the XL pipeline and all that and destroy America's energy independence and promote the destruction of America, as was the election of Bush and Cheney in the year 2000, where the election was stolen in the state of Florida, where it just happened that W's brother Jeb was governor at the time. So they could bring us 9/11 and the Patriot Act. These things are not happening by coincidence. Well, Patrick Burns, who's very expert in this area, has observed there's enough evidence to decertify at least 3 states, which would represent 37 electoral votes. Listen to this. at the risk of becoming a target of the DHS on suspicion of being a domestic terrorist. Here's an update on the investigations into the 2020 election with Patrick Byrne. Michael Gableman, a retired justice of the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, acting as a special counsel, has investigated the Wisconsin election, and he's written an official report that says the election should never have been certified and that it should absolutely be decertified. Garland Favorito's report on the Fulton County, Georgia election found hundreds of thousands of votes that were out of whack. They either had no provenance, no ballot, no image, etc. An investigation of the election in Arizona has found 740,000 ballots with improper chain of title, hundreds of thousands of votes that were clearly illegal with no provenance, appearing on Dominion machines but nowhere else, and more. Patrick says Wisconsin has 10 electoral votes, Georgia 16, Arizona 11, for a total of 37. Since Biden won with 306 votes, if you remove those 37, it takes him down to 269, and he no longer has the majority of the 538 electoral votes, but exactly half, leaving aside three other states we aren't even talking about here and now. Remember, it takes 270 electoral votes to be elected president. Patrick says if we look at the Gableman report, the Favorito report, the work done by Dr. Shiva, Jovan Pulitzer, Ben Cotton, and Doug Logan in Arizona, you will know this is true. And while it's kind of heavy, we should not be misled into thinking the situation is hopeless. There are total ways we could fix this. Even America's dire financial straits can be fixed, he observes. Well, I looked at these reports, and of course, I'm well aware of Michael Gableman right here in Wisconsin. I consider him to be a hero, very courageous, being lambasted by all the Democrats and the media here in Wisconsin, which, since I arrived back in 2006, has turned rather far to the left, to my utter dismay. Former State Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman, legislative Republican special investigator into the 2020 elections, released his draft report highlighting a series of unlawful conduct and irregularities in the 2020 presidential election. A series of entities from a nonpartisan audit bureau to an elected sheriff previously identified similar serious problems and actions that ran counter to state law. Gableman's findings build on a previous body of work that found the Wisconsin Election Commission operated outside of state law. That has become commonplace. Gableman found that the Wisconsin Election Commission, led by major Joe Biden donors and partisan Democrats Ann Jacobs and Mark Thornton, exhibited a pattern of misconduct that rose to new heights during the 2020 election cycle, in which new election-related policies were spread throughout the state, such as the expanded use of unlawful drop boxes and the fraudulent use of the indefinitely confined status for those in nursing or long-term care homes without having been approved by either the administrative rulemaking process, ensuring changes in law that are vetted and properly noticed public meetings, or by receiving a majority vote of the commission. In other words, they were operating outside of the law. The drop boxes, of course, have been used to stuff the ballot boxes right there when they're sitting out in public in the dead of night, where a forthcoming documentary entitled 2,000 Mules shows how the Democrats had hired 2,000 to stuff the ballot boxes, but in order to be paid, they had to take selfies, and where those who are put together the documentary have the selfies of the 2,000 mules stealing the election. And with regard to the indefinitely confined, it turns out that in the nursing homes here in Wisconsin, there was virtually 100% voter participation by individuals who are cognitively confused, even, you know, incapable of uttering a coherent sentence, that nevertheless were being exploited. It is grotesque. The Wisconsin Election Commissioners, under scrutiny, unsurprisingly, have denied any wrongdoing. That's, of course, the pattern, isn't it? What criminals do you know who actually admit their wrongdoing? There are similar reports here from Georgia and from Arizona. This is pretty stunning stuff where Mitchell, there's going to be more and more evidence that the untenability of the denials, the claims that this was a fair and honest election, which have been made from the beginning, were absurd on their face. But we're getting more and more evidence over time. I cannot imagine how the Democrat Party can be so brazen as to claim this was a flawless election when it was manifestly stolen. It was obvious from the beginning when in the five key states they stopped their count. And when they resumed, there'd been a huge shift in favor of Biden, whereas traditional patterns would have had all five states going to Donald Trump. Your thoughts?
Yes, in the dead of night, the election was stolen. Whether it was stuffing ballot boxes or essentially feeding ballots through machines that didn't leave or later had all of the data essentially erased. Yeah, it's a sad day for democracy when, you know, as you were talking about, you know, more than 90, you know, nursing homes, you know, had essentially, you know, 100% participation rate. And the number of crimes, you know, that essentially it takes, because remember, the people who did this probably have some kind of power of attorney for that elderly person, for that handicapped person. And, you know, this is just another way to exploit someone who is vulnerable. And because they don't have to show an ID, there is essentially, you know, no cognitive feedback, I guess you could call it, from the system to, you know, determine if a person is, you know, well, in a vegetative state or a democratic state. But I'm not sure if there's a difference between them. It has done more to destroy democracy, to destroy our constitutional republic. You know, along with this idea of diluting, you know, the voting rights of Americans and allowing illegal immigrants and citizens, foreign nationals, to vote in our elections. It is just another dilution, of that system. And we see it happening everywhere. And it's not only just in the United States. It's a worldwide phenomena. And, you know, if you are a conspiracy analyst or conspiracy minded, you know, and I know that, you know, we don't have essentially spontaneous revolutions and spontaneous events that happen all around the world and essentially in a parallel construction, maybe is a good way to describe it. It truly is crazy. There isn't much to say. It's corrupt.
Mitchell, you got it right. In California, unsurprisingly, paved the way when Jerry Brown passed a motor voter law, which sounds great on its face. When you obtain your driver's license, you register to vote. Except that in California, illegal aliens are entitled to obtain driver's license and thereby were being registered to vote. They do this right out in front of God and everybody. There's nothing like stealing elections in the commons, in the public marketplace. Again, and this report just staggers me that the United States could have degenerated to this level. USA Today, biological man is woman of the year. Amazing progress. Rachel Levine, born as Richard, currently is paid by American taxpayers, hold the position of Assistant Secretary of Health at Health and Human Services under fake President Joe Biden. Before that, he was paid by taxpayers in Pennsylvania to handle public health. Now, Levine, an obese biological man who has long hair and dresses as a woman, is being celebrated by USA Today for being an ideal representation of what it means to be a woman in the United States today. According to the fake news outlet, Levine holds a top spot among other strong and resilient women who have been champions of change across the country, leading and inspiring as they promote and fight for equity and give others a place to seek help and find hope. In spite of the fact that he doesn't have a uterus or a vagina, he is one of the strong and resilient women who are champions of change. Suzette Hackney, USA Today's deputy opinion editor and national columnist, interviewed Levine as part of a profile on cabinet members. Hackney described Levine as the nation's highest-ranking openly transgender official. Beyond working as Assistant Secretary of Health, Levine also leads the U.S. Public Health Service Commission Corps, which Hackney described as a group of 6,000 uniformed public health officials. The HHS also bestowed honor on Levine as part of a panel entitled A Conversation with HHS Women Leaders to Celebrate Women's History Month. So, a model American woman is apparently a man who cuts off his body parts and dresses in drag, if indeed that is what he has done. This is the same Rachel Levine, by the way, who early last year declared that minor children, meaning babies, should be allowed to have sex change without permission from their parents. To Levine, cutting off natural body parts to try to become the opposite gender or some mix of the only two that exist is transgender medicine, such that all children and babies should have access to on demand. For this and other accomplishment throughout her career, Levine is being praised by USA Today as a model specimen of what it means to be a modern American woman. While much of USA Today's profile focused on the doctor's career influences and interests, Levine was also asked to provide advice for transgender, nonconforming, or questioning people. To this, he responded with, "You have to be true to yourself, and I think you have to be who you are. You have tremendous worth just for who you are, no matter who you love, no matter who you are, no matter what your gender identity, sexual orientation, or anything else, and to be true to that." Fake Vice President Harris was also included in USA's Women of the Year list, though it remains unclear what this laughing hyena has actually accomplished to deserve her inclusion. On second thought, Harris belongs on such a list if it's dominated by the likes of an obese transgender mental case who claims to be an expert in health. It's not surprising these images of man and woman can be so manipulated in our culture when we have done that with other vital ideas we have taken for granted for so long. Life, marriage, truth, beauty, gender, love, motherhood, and more. What else is left to overturn? Wrote someone at the Christian Post. In their zealous pursuit of radical feminism, activists define their goal as equality with men and the means of achieving that end as mimicking and imitating men in all their activities. This, rather than recovering and sustaining true femininity while seeking fairness in employment and education, for example. This is just staggering. I'm pleased to add that the Iowa Governor Reynolds has signed a law banning boys from girls' sports. Iowa's first female governor, Republican Kim Reynolds, signed into law this week a bill barring biological males from playing female sports. Fresh off her delivery of the GOP rebuttal to Biden's State of the Union, Reynolds' signature means that athletic programs must be men's, women, or co-ed, and participation is based on the birth gender of the athlete. It has occurred to me, Mitchell, that if you want to have a transgender category, go ahead and create it. But let women's sports be for women, men's sports be for men, and let the others who have this sexual ambiguity or deviance have their own competitive sports. I'm impressed with this governor. Iowa Safe School Executive Director Becky Smith displayed a transgender flag at the signing ceremony to show solidarity with transgender students as she claimed their rights were being infringed upon. Democrat State Senator Janet Peterson, the law changes how students are treated during the school day and in athletics afterward, declaring a girl is a girl during the day, but then in practice is treated like a boy. The ACLU, of all things, criticized the legislation as a violation of the civil rights of transgender girls and women because it passed on the basis of unsupported myths fueled by ignorance and fear. Mitchell, what's the ignorance and fear here? It's obvious. We have male swimmers in women's competition setting new records for women's swimming by a margin of up to 38 seconds, which is unheard of. I mean, this is just incredible. The Democrats have their head where the sun does not shine. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm gonna try to make it as simple for everybody so they can really understand that a man named Dick is Woman of the Year. I mean, seriously, it's that ludicrous. there was a question in the chat room. I don't know if you saw it, but Zog had asked if you had seen that Parkland. There was a settlement in the Parkland case or with the school and the parents.
Yes,
I don't know if there was a payout. I didn't know if you had talked about that. I wasn't aware of it myself.
Yeah, well, you know, I do these shows called Need to Know every single day, 5 days a week.
Right.
And we addressed Parkland yesterday. It's up at my BitChute channel, Jim Fatzer. But Parkland was a complete scam. They did have a guy in a you know, kind of SWAT uniform with a funny looking gun. He was firing what's known as simmunition. It's made out of beeswax and laundry detergent. It'll raise a welt, but it won't pass through the skin. The sheriff had to keep the deputies out of the school because he was worried they might shoot this guy, not realizing it was a completely staged event. They had actually closed the school early that day because it was Valentine's Day, a holiday. So they sent the 3,500 students home. Debbie, the sane progressive, who for reasons unknown to me, no doubt tremendous pressure put upon her, has ceased doing her brilliant reports about events like Parkland and Charlottesville and others, but where she noted that it was the same about three dozen students that appear in all the footage. You have nowhere near 3,500, and given that students have cell phones now, there should be any number of videos and photographs, but they do not exist. They forgot to put up the obituaries for the students. There were supposed to have been 17 who died, but they forgot to put them up. So that over a month later, there was only one entry for that day, an 84-year-old woman who obviously was not a student at Parkland. A young lady who gave an interview and was talking about how she was walking off campus with Nicholas Cruz, the alleged shooter, and how she said to him, gee, I'm surprised it wasn't you. And he turned to her and said, huh? But this is a guy who's been framed for Parkland. It's all very embarrassing, very shabby. If you want more, too, I suggest you go to jamesfetzer.org and look for the blog where I transferred 65 shows I'd done between May and November of 2020. When I had the website, jimtheconspiracyguy.com, you'll find it there under that name. Go to jamesfetzer.org, jimtheconspiracyguy.com, the 65 shows. Probably either of those will get you there. And if you'll scroll down, you'll find How to Spot a False Flag Part 1, How to Spot a False Flag Part 2. If you want an expanded version, I invited Catherine Horton, who is a PhD particle physicist from Oxford, to join me, and we created a four-part version where Catherine added many very astute comments, but included there are our explanations of how we know Nice, France, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, Orlando, Parkland, Las Vegas, were scams, that these were all orchestrated events. So, yeah, I like the question, and yes, I have noted, and yes, I have been reporting on it in other shows, but you can easily track down what I've had to say about it. I have a whole book on it, by the way, of course. You know, go to moonrockbooks.com, and the book on Parkland is among the six that have been banned by Amazon.com. Not only my Sandy Hook book, where I brought together 13 experts, but my Boston bombing book, there might be 17 in that case. Orlando and Dallas, Parkland, Charlottesville. I bring together groups of experts to dissect what happened, and because there are multiple independent investigators, yet our conclusions converge, I offer summary assessments and overviews in the prologues to each of those volumes, plus one on the moon landing, believe it or not, which has also been banned. So here in the United States, we have the world's largest book distributor banning books. And frankly, I have no doubt that this is on behalf of the American government. So Amazon, which may also fall under the First Amendment with regard to freedom of speech and freedom of the press by virtue of its vast encompassing the entirety of the world, I have been told but have yet to verify, that makes them responsible to the First Amendment as well. Either way, Amazon appears to be violating the rights of the American people, and I'm going to do my best to hold them to account. So, yes, I welcome the question, and there's a lot out there if you follow up on the leads I've just offered here. Mitchell, your thoughts before we hit the break? If not, Mitchell, let me proceed here to kick in, turn to another story. The red states are beating out the blue states in economic recovery. Surprise, surprise. Red states and blue have largely adopted alternative approaches to COVID mitigation. States with Republican governors and legislatures tend to support individual freedom, not keeping businesses shut down in perpetuity and other oppressive restrictions. Meanwhile, blue states went all in on lockdowns, restrictions, and mandates. More when we return from this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is kept. give. I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. 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 Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And as those who were for the event on Wednesday, which is just being posted now at my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, I explained during the first hour how I had interviewed a private investigator who's mastered techniques for doing research on the internet by the name of Brian Davidson. It was a fascinating interview you can also find on my BitChute channel. And where he explained how some of these techniques enable you to compare photographs to identify their location, the time they were taken, and all that. So after the show, I thought, well, this is interesting because there's this very important photograph where we have been uncertain whether it was taken the morning of the 14th or the day before on the 13th. So I sent it to Brian with no explanation, no background, no context. He didn't know. He just assumed I wanted to know where and when it took place. And even though all he had to work on was a photograph, he sent me back a couple days later an exact location that was taken in the Sandy Hook parking lot that there were, it shows crime scene vehicle already at that location. It shows Connecticut State Police present. It shows Wayne Carver leaning against the wall with his arms folded. It shows crime scene tape already up. It also shows that the windows in classroom 10 are intact, meaning this is before the event. And he dated it as having occurred on the 13th in the afternoon around 4:30, plus or minus 30 minutes. I think he got it exactly right, and it's a high-definition, a high-resolution photograph. I actually had participated in a video deposition of Wayne Carver, and when I showed him the best version I had of the photograph at the time. He claimed it was too blurry to identify the party that I suggested was he himself. Of course, he knew damn well it was he himself. He just wanted to be evasive. Well, if you go down to my blog at jamesfetzer.org and go to the second or the third most recent, you can look at this photograph in high definition. You can even read the license plate numbers on the cars. It's staggering, in my opinion. This is the most definitive proof that Sandy Hook was a hoax, that it was staged, and that the Connecticut State Police and Wayne Carver, the medical examiner for the state of Connecticut, were complicit. Indeed, it could not have been pulled off had they not been party to the fraud, where it appears that the whole community was paid off to participate in what Sophia Smallstorm has called a capstone event, where they pay communities around the United States to have these events take place and then make sure they don't speak out about the way in which they're presented to the public. In other words, whole communities are participating in these frauds. If you thought this would, if this boggles your mind, this would justification, who can believe that so many citizens of the United States can be bought off, that their integrity can be bought for dollars and cents? But on the other hand, given we live in a materialistic society, maybe it's not so surprising anyway. Either way, check it out. Go to jamesfetzer.org and take a look. You are going to be stunned. If you had any lingering doubts about it, this resolves definitively that Sandy Hook was a hoax, even though each and every one of you undoubtedly knows persons, even relatives, friends, who are convinced it was real and won't even hear of the existence of evidence to the contrary. Well, there it is, a high-resolution photograph that proves the point that this was staged and that the Connecticut State Police and Wayne Carver were complicit. Meanwhile, I was introducing red states beating out blue in economic recovery. Red states and blue have largely adopted alternative approaches to COVID mitigation. States with Republican governors and legislatures tend to support individual freedom, not keeping businesses shut down in perpetuity or other oppressive restrictions. Meanwhile, blue states went all in on lockdowns, restrictions, and mandates. As a result, many businesses sustained significant damage or went under completely. Meanwhile, there's been a mass migration of people taking themselves and their businesses out of the blue states and into the red. In light of these developments, new information from the Department of Labor confirms red states are leading blue states in economic recovery. Surprise, surprise. Over a series of months, states run by Republicans have consistently led their Democrat counterparts in bringing back jobs that were lost since COVID emerged. Meanwhile, the leading 20 states with the lowest rate of joblessness, 17, are managed by Republicans. On average, states run by the GOP are also able to boast about a 93% recovery rate for employment opportunities. The same cannot be said for blue, known for high taxes, stringent business regulations, and declining numbers of jobs as businesses relocate. Meanwhile, states run by Democrats are also forced to contend with a joblessness rate that is, on the average, 1% higher than red. Collectively, America's 27 GOP-run states have an average 3.5 unemployment rate, while America's Democrat-run states maintain an average 4.5 unemployment rate. In light of this new data from the Department of Labor, Republicans have not hesitated to weigh in. The GOP maintains the aforementioned data is a testament to the success of conservative economic policies. Republicans are also pointing out the extent to which lockdowns and heavy restrictions impose burdens upon the American people. The economy, of course, has become very important. Thus, with midterm elections approaching, it works in the favor of Republicans to have a leg up on Democrats regarding economic recovery. More emphasis continues to be placed on the economy amid inflation and higher price of gas, Both of these problems, including soaring food prices, are hitting the American people where it hurts, making life less affordable. At this time, the GOP maintains by Americans voting them back to the Senate and House, the country can begin to recover. Multiple polls have Republicans projected to win big in November's midterm election. Frankly, I have no doubt about it whatsoever. I'm projecting that the GOP are going to take as many as 100 seats in the House and 3 to 4 seats in the Senate. Mitchell, your thoughts?
Democrats are in serious trouble. Their policies are complete failures as well. You know, Democrats have a core belief that nobody has tried socialism or communism correctly, and that the DNC and the Democrat Party have the magic formula that will leave you, well, let's just say, with starvation, war, and mass disease. It's a sad state of affairs. But, you know, as I said earlier, you know, when you're, when you believe that the, you know, the average, woman in America is a transsexual, that is such a dystopian view of America. It's not in this reality that I live in.
It's so bizarre, so bizarre that this, corpulent man who wears long hair and wears dresses is declared to be Woman of the Year by USA Today. I mean, what a devastating indictment of the state of the United States today. Just grotesque. Meanwhile, Hal Turner has reported Russia announces nuclear weapons deploying to Iran. According to Hal Turner, the Kremlin has made the following announcement. Iran will play a crucial role in Russia's nuclear deterrent. As such, Russian nuclear missiles will be installed in Iran in the very near future. No reports yet of heads exploding inside Israel over this. Let me say, typically in a situation like this, announcing they're going to be installed in Iran, where Russia has every reason to do so, given the hostility demonstrated by the West and NATO, that it would like to have a strong ally in Iran, my suspicion is those missiles are already there. They are already there. Meanwhile, a roundtable discussion reported by Dr. Joe Mercola, which I've just published on my blog at jamesvetzer.org, made rather crucial findings here. Story at a glance. March 7th. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis hosted a roundtable discussion about COVID treatment, early treatment, suppression, vaccine risks, collateral damage from school closures and lockdowns, and more. March 8th, the Florida Department of Health updated its guidance, formally recommending against COVID vaccination for healthy children 5 to 17. Florida is the first state to go against CDC vaccine recommendations. Florida Surgeon General Joseph Lopato stressed that as we move forward, we must insist on holding decision makers accountable for their harmful public health decisions. Their choices that they made for everyone were the wrong choices that led to basically no appreciable benefit, Lopato said. According to Dr. J. Bhattacharya, one of the most egregious mistakes made was to ignore the fact that there's a thousandfold difference in risk between the lowest and highest risk groups. Children are at virtually no risk of dying from COVID, yet children have been forced to bear the burden of disease prevention. Almost from the very beginning of the pandemic, we adopted policies that seemed like they were tailor-made to harm children. According to Dr. Sandra Gupta, what we've seen over the past 2 years is an inversion of the schedule of uncertainty. Doubt was cast on things that were certain, while certainty was claimed for things we had no clue about. Decision makers chose to do the very things we knew for certain would cause harm. They inverted the precautionary principle to minimize harm and chose to maximize harm instead. And I guarantee you, this was no accident. This was not inadvertent. Among those who are involved in this roundtable, which, as I say, is posted on my blog at jamesfetzer.org, Florida Surgeon General Joseph Lobato, a former National Institute of Health-funded researcher, Dr. Robert Malone, a molecular virologist, bioethicist, vaccine researcher, and co-developer of the mRNA vaccine platform, Dr. Tracy Hogue, Ph.D., an epidemiologist, Dr. Jill Ackman, a family physician, Dr. Christopher D'Amo, Ph.D., an epidemiologist and integrative medicine specialist, Dr. Shevta Raju, an internist, Dr. Harvey Rice, Ph.D., professor of epidemiology trained in mathematical modeling of infectious diseases, Dr. J. Bhattacharya, Ph.D., professor of health policy at Stanford, research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research and co-author of the Great Barrington Declaration, which calls for focused protection of the most vulnerable. Dr. Martin Kulldor, Ph.D., former professor of medicine at Harvard, now senior scientific director of the Brownstone Institute, a biostatistician and epidemiologist with expertise in vaccine safety evaluation, co-author of the Great Barrington Declaration. Dr. Joseph Freeman, a rural emergency physician and clinical scientist specializing in harm-benefit analysis. Dr. Sunetha Gupta, Ph.D., Oxford University professor and epidemiologist with expertise in immunology, vaccine development, and mathematical modeling of infectious diseases, co-author of the Great Barrington Declaration. This is truly fascinating. Among the issues they discuss, we must hold decision makers to account. Their choices that they made for everyone were the wrong choices that led to basically no appreciable benefit. Joseph Lobato, Florida Surgeon General, thousandfold difference in risk was ignored. Stunning denials of science. Hospital fired staff who'd had COVID and had natural immunity simply because they did not want to get the experimental jab. Those with natural immunity are not just less likely to get COVID again, they're far less likely to spread it to others. This makes them among the most valuable staff members a hospital can have, and yet they were routinely discarded. That goes against basic principles of public health, Kulldor said, and to have a director of the CDC who questions natural immunity, which we have now, is sort of like having a director of NASA who questions whether the Earth is flat or round. It's just mind-boggling that we've come into a situation like that. The inversion of the precautionary principle. The powers that be told us measures and restrictions would work, but we didn't know they would work. Moreover, we didn't know what their purpose actually was. It was a rather incoherent set of goals. One thing we knew for certain was lockdowns and other restrictions would have enormous costs. That was the one thing we were certain about, yet that's what we went ahead and did. We inverted the precautionary principle of trying to minimize harm by doing the one thing we knew that would cause harm, actually maximum harm. Plausibility versus science. What's been conveyed to the public have been things that were plausible but not scientific. There's a big difference between things that seem plausible that might possibly be true and things that are scientific. No justification for mandating vaccines for children. There's no justification for mandating vaccine for children, full stop. We're of a strong opinion that if there's risk, there must be choice. This is fundamental bioethics 101. As noted in the second physician's declaration, children clinical risk from SARS is negligible, and the long-term safety of the shots cannot be determined prior to the enactment of mandated vaccine policies. Not only are children at high risk of severe adverse effects from being vaxxed, but having healthy, unvaccinated children in the population is crucial to achieving herd immunity. Mask mandates have had no benefit. Speaking to the issue of mask mandates, looking at the effects of universal mask wearing, a one assessed compliance and outcomes in the Wisconsin school system. On the average, 92% of children complied with a mask wearing, and only 7 students out of 7,000 caught COVID. That was used to proclaim that masks work. The problem is there was no control group, and the low infection rate could have been due to anything. If only 7,000, maybe if they had not had the mask mandate at all, it would have been 6,000 or 5,000 or none. The point is made that studies from Scandinavia where masks were not worn had extremely low infection rates among children. So the mask, pro or con, may well have been irrelevant to the outcome. The collateral damage has been immense. In the case of school closures, for example, collateral damage has been immense. Physical and mental health has been impacted. There's been a doubling of obesity and diabetes during the pandemic, a dramatic increase in anxiety, depression, and stress. Not to mention, statistics show a shocking spike in fentanyl overdose deaths among high school-aged adolescents in the U.S. between 2020 and 2022. Unbelievably bad. Was harming children intended? A study cited that as a result of school closure, children in the U.S. will lose 5.5 million life years. Lost learning literally ripples through the child's entire lifetime. They lead to less healthy and shorter lives and more likely to be steeped in poverty. Florida recommends against COVID shots for healthy children. Florida is taking the lead here. During the roundtable, risks such as myocarditis were also discussed. Florida is the first state to go against the CDC's vaccine recommendation. In a statement published with a new guideline, March 8, 2022, Lepedo, the state surgeon general, said, based on currently available data, the risks of administering COVID-19 vaccination among healthy children may outweigh the benefits. These decisions should be made on an individual basis and never mandated. Mitchell, your thoughts.
Well, Jim, this dystopian world that we're being dipped into, can people differentiate between reality and the world that we're, you know, that we're being told that we're living in? And doesn't that mean essentially that everything in that world is, you know, like the Truman Show? And that, you know, so many people, you know, live their lives, watching, you know, TV and watching the mainstream media, you know, reading the Mockingbird media news press releases, you know, wherever they're coming from. And they're living the Truman world. They're living in the Truman Show. Because everything that they know and everything that they think they know is a script. And when something is changed, another actor is essentially trotted out and, you know, put in place. It truly is pretty Orwellian.
Oh, it's unbelievably bad, Mitchell. You got that exactly right. And if you thought there's any justice left in the world, this is going to disillusion you. Get this. Jussie Smollett walks out of jail after appeal court orders release, served less than a week of his 150-day conviction. My God, so many of us were grateful when this monster who'd perpetrated this hoax, I have no doubt about it having been to benefit Kamala Harris's lingering legislation and anti-lynching law that no one thought was appropriate. So when he perpetrated the fraud using two Nigerian bodybuilders who were posing as rednecks with a noose and bleach to pour on him, even though it was so cold that morning at 2 a.m., the bottle of bleach would have frozen solid, where he paid them with a personal check for $3,500. When he was convicted, it was such an obvious act of justice, many of us were tremendously relieved that there was a modicum of justice left in the American legal system. Now we have our doubts. Following the decision earlier today by an Illinois appellate court to cut short the former Empire State's 150-day sentence pending appeal, Smollett walked out of Cook County Jail at around 8 p.m. local time. Surrounded by members of his defense team, family, and other supporters, Smollett was silent as he exited the Chicago facility. Defense attorney Nene Uche told the assembled media, his client drank only water over the last 6 days and ate no food whatsoever. after less than a week behind bars on a 150-day sentence for faking a hate crime, Jussie Smollett will be walking out of the Cook County Jail on Wednesday. This is in inverse chronological order. As Sibley jury Smollett Empire co-star Tranji Henson and others pled for the actor to be released, he was placed in protective custody. Under armed guard surveillance and cameras, Smollett later was moved to the psychiatric ward, as revealed by his brother on social media. Unsurprisingly, Special Prosecutor Daniel Webb unsuccessfully opposed a move to free Smollett. Not only is Smollett not being held in solitary confinement, but the Cook County Sheriff's Office made public the specific measures that are being taken to ensure the health, safety, and well-being of Mr. Smollett while he serves his jail term. The former Iran-Contra lawyer told the court today, in reference to the relatively benign conditions under which the actor was incarcerated, "Now there'll be more courtroom drama in this sad saga." Convicted on December 9, 2020, over the widely covered January 2019 so-called mega attack, Smollett was sentenced to 150 days in jail on March 10th as part of an overall sentence of 30 months probation. That sentence also included $120,106 in restitution to the Windy City for cop overtime spent on his case and a $25,000 fine. The fine and probation remain in place, but Smollett is free to travel outside the Windy City and check in remotely with authorities. Last week, just before being led away by deputies after a visibly angered Judge James Lynn handed down the sentence, Smollett stood up at the defense table and yelled, "I am not suicidal. If anything happens to me in there, I did not do it," the actor continued, as he was being escorted out of the courtroom. He raised his fist in the air and loudly declared, "I am not suicidal. I am innocent." But he's anything but innocent. A one-page order unceremoniously released the Illinois appellate court today, and a 2-1 decision granted the motion from the former Empire actor's lawyers for a stay of the sentence. Denied an appeal by the sentencing judge last week, the defense team sought to let Smollett free while his appeal on 5 felony convictions is pending. The evidence in this case, of course, is simply overwhelming. This is a slam dunk. For him to continue to claim he's innocent reflects his massive narcissism. This is a guy who thinks the world revolves around him. The appellate court judge agreed, citing Smollett would likely have already served his sentence before the appeal had gotten very far, that he was convicted on nonviolent offenses and allowed out of court a free man for now. We will be back.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
Oh,
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, before we open the lines to callers, and you can note the number if you don't already have it, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452, I have an announcement. I offered courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning for 35 years to undergraduates to enable them to detect and avoid common fallacies and mistakes in argument that are not infrequently used to mislead, deceive, and take advantage of them. We have been massively played. As you know, I've become an expert in exposing false flags. I've published many books about them, JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, and more. Well, in certain ways, while those books provide an example, it's a different outcome than teaching critical thinking itself, as I did for so many years. The difference between, say, giving a man a fish and teaching a man how to fish. So I have decided to offer an online course on critical thinking and conspiracy theories to be taught by Jim Fetzer, PhD, philosophy professor emeritus. Course information, course schedule, 15 one-hour seminars, Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. Central Time, which will begin on 6 April and end on 13 July 2022. This course may be repeated. Registration, $150 for the course. Course materials provided online without charge. Course description, an introduction to critical thinking using conspiracy theories as research illustrations. For everyone who needs to be master, who needs to master the ability to think things through and avoid being played by false narratives. Course materials provided online and includes actually books, blogs, essays, and videos. Syllabus, 6 April, Introduction to the Nature of Thought, Signs and Minds. 13 April, Studying Language, Syntax, Semantics, and Pragmatics. 20 April, Arguments, Deductive, Inductive, and Abductive. 27 April, Applying Scientific Reasoning to Conspiracy Theories. 4 May, Informal Fallacies, Part 1, Fallacies of Ambiguity. 11 May, Informal Fallacies, Part 2, Fallacies of Relevance. 18 May, The Assassination of JFK, The Use of Fabricated Evidence. 25 May, The Atrocities of 9/11, Violating the Laws of Physics. 1 June, The Moon Landings, How We Know We Didn't Go. 8 June, Senator Paul Wellstone, Minnesota, accident or assassination. 15 June, Sandy Hook, designing events for emotional impact. 22 June, Nice, Orlando, Parkland, Charlottesville, Las Vegas. 27 June, Pizzagate. Is it myth or is it real? Disturbing to the max. 6 July, the pandemic and the vax. The greatest hoax of all. 13 July, the official history of World War II. Politics trumps science. By virtue of the technology being employed, the first 10 students who register will have access to me as I'm presenting and can raise questions or make comments as representatives of the members of the class. Registration is open. Go to mixnstream.com/critical-thinking.html. I repeat, mixnstream, that's capital M-I-X, capital N, stream.com/critical-thinking.html. I look forward to all of those who want to learn more participating in this opportunity to learn how to fish. Mitchell, let me know if we have callers standing by. I'm welcoming calls and, of course, any comments or thoughts you may have about Jussie Smollett or whatever. Your thoughts.
Well, one quick note that a Russian general has now claimed to be, you know, sexually molested, but his picture appears to look somewhat like Jussie Smollett. that was a meme I saw earlier. However, Bruce from Texas is on.
Okay, terrific. Bruce, join the conversation.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Mitchell. Am I coming through all right?
Yes, you are.
Okay, super. You know, it's sad to hear that Smollett's out of jail. I was going to send him some money for Vaseline, you know, because so he could, you know, avoid injury in the shower there or whatever.
Well,
you'd get some kind of lubrication. But on a serious note, go ahead.
You know what they say, Bruce? Don't drop the soap.
Drop the soap, yeah. I thought that'd be a vacation for him, you know? You probably end up paying to be.
Bruce, this case is so absurd. It's such an insult to the American people. I think it shatters any lingering illusions of faith in the American judicial system. This is just as outrageous as it gets. Completely disgusting. Go ahead.
I agree. And did you hear his mother lambasting the judge and the media for not doing their jobs for her son? And I guess she's Jewish, you know. And she got no reprimand or anything. You know, they just let her, raise her voice and just point fingers at the judge. It's just it illuminates the power of the Jewish people that they have in our society. You know? And I think that his claims of, you know, if I kill myself, I didn't do it. He may be holding some secrets, and that's what he's getting at. With Kamala Harris, you know, and all that anti-lynching bill, he may have been put up to it. So he was afraid that maybe he's going to get whacked to keep his mouth shut. What do you think?
Well, I think it's very obvious what happened here. This is such a blatant scam. The former commissioner of police observed, who is himself also black, that Jussie Smollett still had the noose around his neck when they went to interview him as an apartment after the event had been reported, and that no black man would allow a noose to hang around their neck a moment longer than absolutely necessary. They'd get it off right away. He was wearing it as though it were a medallion. Not only that, but he came out of the subway with a tuna sandwich, and the commissioner observed normally victims just forget all about what they were doing at the time, and yet Jussie Smollett's tuna sandwich remained intact for him to consume subsequently. This is just so offensive and so blatant, it's just disgraceful and insulting. Anything else you'd like to add? Yeah.
Yeah, this video of George Floyd dropping a little white baggie on the ground by his foot and then by the wall. And then when he's in his vehicle, you know,
Well, the George Floyd thing, so far as I can tell, my research suggests it was all fake. When he was arrested and handcuffed behind his back, he had hair on his head when he was put into the squad car. But the body lying on the ground has completely bald, no hair on its head, has hands in front of its chest. And when it's lifted up to be put onto a stretcher, it has no legs. It appears they use a Sigma 7 African-American torso training dummy in order to stand in for a real person there. You can check this out if you go to my blog at jamesfetzer.org, the False Flags and Conspiracy 2020, which is now all available to the public. Go down and track down my presentation, Deception Galore. You will be blown away if you haven't already seen it. A final thought, okay, Bruce?
Yeah, I do need to go. Appreciate taking the call. My last thing is I want to be careful about anything that comes out of Hal Turner's mouth. If you go to, if you type in Hal Turner, FBI informant, the SPLC itself affirms that he was an FBI informant. And so what he may be doing is putting out information to trigger the Jewish power lobby in the United States, because Joe Biden is trying to get oil, trying to get relations with Iran in order to offset the oil boxes.
Look, but it's an elementary fallacy to discount a report on the basis of its origin. Hal Turner may not be a totally reliable source, and yet what he says here may be true. I'm putting it on the table, not because I endorse it. Notice I made the point of identifying the source, but because it's very plausible to me that this may be a move Vladimir Putin is going to make. Bruce, thanks for joining us. We're going to bring in Paul, and I would be surprised if the background were coming from him. Paul, join the conversation.
Yeah, no background here. I just wanted to compliment Bruce. I don't know if he's still there yet, but on his call the other day to Michael Rivera's show on RBN, it was quite interesting. I didn't hear the whole thing, but I heard Michael Rivera's reaction and what took place after. You know, Bruce was identifying you know, the Jews behind a lot of this, and it was so if you're there, Bruce, that was enjoyable.
This is very interesting to me for a reason I'm going to explain, but tell me, what was Michael Rivera's reaction?
Oh, it was just typical nonsense about, oh, these people are individuals, you know. He went to the, I mean, so many of these, when you listen to across, and again, I don't listen as much as I used to, and I'm just, in many ways, I'm trying to just kind of detach myself from all this nonsense, because I just feel anymore I'm covered with slime, you know, with everything that's going on. But yeah, there's multiple hosts over there. I mean, the other day, you know, John Moore, who I mentioned to you, Jim, he allowed Len Horowitz to say that, you know, the Jews were marched into the gas chambers. Now, Len Horowitz is, you know, a good guy for the most part. He's spoken out against the pharmaceutical cartel, and he's opposed to vaccines and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, just the idea that you're comparing what's going on to Jews being marched into gas chambers, and talked about how a lot of these people behind this, what's going on, were Nazis. And there's just so much crap out there. It's unbelievable. And right after Michael Rivera, you know, said he's not going to take any more criticism of the Jews, and he's not really going to allow this, and some Jewish woman calls in. It's almost as if on cue. And she starts talking about her experience when she was younger, and there was a church, and so like a 7-year-old, you know, nephew of hers was so offended because there's a depiction, I believe it was a mural in this church in Austria that depicted a ritual child murder by the Jews, and how the Jews were essentially caricatures, and they were made to be extremely physically unappealing in this depiction of ritual child murder in this Austrian church, and how, you know, she was emotionally damaged by this, and how her young cousin was, you know, needed therapy. It was just so ridiculous what's going on everywhere. It appears like theater to me. The Jussie Smollett thing appears to be theater. I mean, you've made the comment, Jim, about outrageous and all the, I think this is what they do all the time. They want us to be outraged. They want us to be pissed off. They want us to feel helpless. They want us to be afraid. It's a constant manipulation. Like I said so many times, and as Miles Mathis has pointed out, if it's on TV and it looks like it's acted, that's what it is. Because in most places, you're not allowed to have cameras in the courtroom. So why do we get sketch artists for so many other trials, and yet we get this theater production with Jussie Smollett. If I was a betting man, and you know I am, Jim, and by the way, I'm going to lay the 7.5 points with Wisconsin tonight because I think they're going to make, I think they're going to get rid of Colgate. But anyway, I just don't believe Jussie Smollett will do any time in jail. I just, you know, tell me I'm wrong. You know, convince me that OJ, you know, did any real time after his 33-year sentence, and then people saw him out playing golf not that many years after that.
Paul, I want to pick up on several of your points. First, with regard to Michael Rivero, because we have this new result from Brian Davidson replicating what had been published in the book, that this photograph of the crime scene vehicle on the scene was taken before the event, which is established by evidence internal to the photograph, because a string of four windows in classroom 10 is undamaged and they'd be shot out after the event. We know it's before the event. It's decisive proof that Connecticut State Police and Wayne Carver were complicit in the fraud. It is probably the single most devastating evidence we have. This was all staged. I sent it to several parties who have large audiences, asking them to feature me to discuss it. Among them was Michael Rivero. He came back to me and he said he was preoccupied with preventing World War III, so he couldn't do it. I mean, can you believe this? That makes him out to be the Gerald Ford of radio hosts. He can't walk and chew gum at the same time. I'm sorry to say, but I find this insulting beyond belief. Then you mentioned John Moore. Since you mentioned John Moore and I had this new proof, I reached out to John Moore, as did Ron Avery, who's got a whole archive on my case and who's an expert on defamation cases and their abuse. And we both made a pitch to John Moore to have me come on to discuss what had happened at Sandy Hook and how we know it was a sham. And he took a couple of days to mull it over and came back with me and told me actually he was going to feature a Sandy Hook mother on his show instead. Believe it or not, Paul, believe it or not. As for the Badgers tonight, they play Colgate at 8:50 p.m. Central Time. Colgate's coming off of a 15-game winning streak, and they have excellent three-point shooters, but I'm with you, Paul. I want the Badgers to prevail. It should be quite a good game. And I'm happy to say that the Badgers, although they suffered two really embarrassing losses in their final two games, but nevertheless were co-champions of the Big Ten, have the game in Milwaukee, which is right down the road, you know. And then if they proceed further, the further subsequent games will be in Chicago. So those are real benefits that the team doesn't have to travel great distances. Chicago is only 2 hours drive from my home here in Oregon, Wisconsin. Your further thoughts, Paul?
Yeah, well, I don't want to jinx it, but I've been having quite a nice little run in this tournament so far, just picking the bigger name schools with the smaller spreads. I haven't laid any big numbers, but yeah, like I got Ohio State right now, and they're, you know, clearly going to win the game and so forth. So yeah, the Big Ten has been doing well so far, and we shall see. Indiana, I think, was just a little too worn out, and you know, St. Mary's has got quite the offensive schemes going on. So I can't wait to see their St. Mary's matchup with UCLA. You know, just talking about real world stuff. But yeah, I agree with you on all these people. I just, you know, to say to you that he's going to feature a Sandy Hook mother instead. What does he mean instead? You know, he was already going to feature her anyway. You know, this to me just shows either the complete, what we'll call either cognitive or intellectual bankruptcy of these people, or the fact that they're just absolutely corrupt. Because I can't imagine that any grown, I'm almost done real quick, any grown
don't
man.
Take your time.
Any grown man who has taken the time to look at the details, okay, you can call it evidence if you like, but to me, the devil is in the details. As Jim Mars always used to say, the circumstances are the circumstances, and this is why circumstantial evidence, in many cases, is far more important and even better than so-called eyewitness testimony. Anybody can say anything, right? But what are the circumstances? And you and Sophia and other people have done the best work on the circumstances that existed. So to have these people, I mean, I've heard many opinions about Michael Rivero. He says a lot of good things on his show, and he does have a pretty good, you know, presence on the radio. And apparently he's one of the highest rated, you know, shows over there at Republic. But, you know, it's just to have a guy like also like John Moore get 3 hours every day. Right. 3 hours. Well, and essentially a lot of his shows, if you've heard them, and I know you haven't, but you just listen to some of his shows, they're like an infomercial. So to say to a well-regarded researcher like you, well, you know, I'm going to have some woman on instead who just makes this claim, and I'm not going to look at the evidence that you present, that just tells you what you need to know, Jim.
Well, it's shocking. I mean, this guy's supposed to be a good guy. You know, I wrote to him in good faith. I sent him a lot of evidence. I even sent him the FEMA manual for the mass casualty exercise involving children. I gave him plenty of proof, but it appears he just can't fathom. He does not have an open mind. Remember, Mark Twain observed, it's easier to fool a man than to convince him he's been fooled. Maybe John Moore just can't admit he was wrong. That would not be surprising, except that it comes from an individual who, as you observe, is getting 3 hours of radio time every morning on RBN. I think that's shocking.
I agree. And my quick take, we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, this whole thing over in Russia, Ukraine, they're going to use this similar to COVID. I don't know if they're going to be able to drag it out 2 years. But this is another psychological operation designed to do lots of damage, and they're going to tag off of that to continue to do this economic damage. And part of the program overall, as you know, is our general overall destruction. You know, not just health, but economically and, you know, racially, so on and so forth. And when you see what's going on, I recently watched a few videos online about the so-called housing crisis situation in Las Vegas. And then also San Diego and then Tucson. Here in the Bay Area, it's not even worth talking about. We recently got one of those flyers from the real estate agents that periodically drop in your mailbox. And, you know, they showed all the selling prices. And every single house in this area is selling for a minimum of $100,000 to $200,000 over asking price. What I watched about what's going on in Vegas, because people in California are moving there just like they're moving there to Tucson, is that all the rents are being jacked up. There's multiple fees, non-refundable fees to apply to live in some of these apartments or to apply for a rental house. It's like $150 plus application fee. And there's no guarantee that you're going to get the spot, because in many cases they're taking hundreds of applications from people and pocketing the fees. And the one quick interview that I saw was very telling. It was an activist, one of these, you know, consumer, you know, advocates. And he said that he made the golden point, which these news stories, you can watch them on YouTube, failed to cover. He said that these hedge funds and these other places that are buying up real estate are behind all this. And I just thought, you know, they're just creating more of a pickle. Grinding down the working man, the middle class, the working class. It's where everybody's getting screwed big time, and it's just, it's got to stop.
Oh, Paul, I think you got it all right. I agree with everything you're saying. And it just floors me that persons who ought to know better, particularly when they're confronted with devastating evidence like this photograph in high resolution, where you can see the Connecticut State Police's crime scene vehicle, Wayne Carver, all there with crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed, which is provable based on evidence internal to the photograph. What more could you ask by way of proof? In my opinion, this is the single most devastating evidence we have that this was completely contrived, even a more devastating than the FEMA manual itself, which one would have thought people would find convincing. So I even send John Moore the FEMA manual, and yet we don't hear from him in a positive way. He tells me he's going to be interviewing a mother from Sandy Hook. When I asked for her identity, he wouldn't provide it, because I might very well have been able to provide evidence that demonstrated she was a big-time liar as is anyone else who claims to have lost children or loved ones at Sandy Hook. I mean, Paul, it's just outrageous.
I'm on your side, and if he would take my call, and I doubt it because it's been over a month or two probably. I think I called in two or three times prior to that, but he wouldn't take my call after that. So, but if I was allowed to call in, I'd just say, hey, listen, is there any way that I could see the autopsy report or the autopsy photos of your child? Is that possible? You know, I would just do it because, you know, I've just had it with this nonsense. You talk about proof. There's your proof. Show us the autopsy reports and the autopsy photos. That's the only proof there is, in my opinion.
Paul, they've done a lot of fabricating of evidence here, and I'll just say the evidence is simply overwhelming. There's an overview of what happened at Sandy Hook from False Flags and Conspiracy 2022, where Kelly Watt, who is a co-author of a chapter over which I was sued by one of the purported Sandy Hook parents, and a presentation I make as an overview of Sandy Hook can both be found there, downloaded for free. You can watch it there. I'm so glad you called in, Paul, and I hope you are able to reach John Moore. And if you have any luck, let me know. Meanwhile, let me just close by observing, if you want to learn how to fish, I'm offering this course online on critical thinking and conspiracy theories. It's going to begin on the 6th of April, end on the 13th of July. You can register already. It's open at mixinstream.com/critical-thinking.html. I believe in giving back what I benefited from in the past. I would welcome your participation in the class. And as I mentioned, the first 10 who register for the class will have the opportunity to interact with me by giving comments and questions in the chat as I'm presenting live, though that won't be possible for other members of the class. They'll have a email address where they can write with questions I can follow up as we proceed. Paul and Bruce, I thank you both for calling in. Mitchell, you were wonderful today. Thank you for joining me today, and much more to come. Spend as much time with your friends, your family, your loved ones, because we still do not know how much time we have left. Have a great weekend. Go Badgers.
Go Badgers, okay.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, the Perfect Triangle with Perfect Giuseppe Triangle. From the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.